It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Here he is, and that's me, David Holland, and I'm excited to have you with us on the program today. Gobs and gobs and gobs of good information to share with you, and the man to do it is...
The Fastest 5 Minutes in Finance with Scott Connor.
You love that build-up, don't you?
I have rather a lot to talk about today.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, you know, did you ever have this kind of daily ego reinforcement anywhere else? I mean, isn't it nice to get a nice... good pump up first thing in the morning and
sure.
All right. We'll go ahead.
Thank you. Tuesday's trade was all in anticipation of Apple's earnings number.
All about Apple.
All about Apple all day. Although I have a couple of other interesting things that I want to tell you that were a little bit beneath the radar. But overall, pretty good day for Tuesday's trade. The Dow up 74, closed slightly above 13,000. So that's good news.
Really? That's great news.
Yeah, we like that. S&P up 5 at 1372. NASDAQ down 8 to 2961. The NASDAQ is so heavily weighted to Apple that at this point, Apple has become so big from a price perspective and a market cap perspective that NASDAQ goes as Apple goes. So down
How much of that 2961 do they represent?
I'd have to go back and take a look at
it. It's a big chunk, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a big chunk. As okay. Apple goes, the index goes. Gold up a little bit, up $9. Oil about flat, 103 a barrel, and tens at 197. So overall, I'd say just a nice sort of a nice, easy, breezy day.
Answer this, because I know listeners will really appreciate this insight. I always check the market, and I'm watching it, and after like another 5 or 10 minutes after the market closed, all of a sudden there's like a final adjustment.
Yeah.
So what's going on there?
They're still getting the final trade prices in. The NASDAQ is pretty much a hard 4 o'clock close. When you get the numbers at 4 o'clock, they're pretty good, but there's still a lot of manual process involved, particularly in the Dow, getting the last closing trades and things like that.
So it's like at the Trading Places movie when they're doing the trades and the guys are trying to get that final frozen orange juice, the guy's, you know, making hand signals and, you know, writing like he's writing in the air like the final trade he wants to make. The market's already closed, but it's kind of like the final wrap-up.
Yeah, but even at that, we don't get really, the index isn't finalized until, well, let's call it 4:06, 4:07, maybe 4:08 in the afternoon, something like that. But that's not because trades are taking place. Trades are shut off at 4 o'clock, but all the prices have to be reported and calculated and all that
stuff. Okay, so it's a final tally.
Yeah, it's just a final
tally.
But we had quite a bit, you know, we're knee-deep in earnings season here, and earnings season has really, really been terrific. Earnings growth over last year, 5.2% so far on the S&P.
That's good.
Yeah, that's very strong. We've had 153 of the S&P 500 companies report. That's about a third, call it a third. 76% have beaten their estimates.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's terrific. I think that's really a great...
Again, I talked about this the other day. Is it because the companies are doing better, or is it because the analyst expectations for earnings are just so abysmal?
Well, we're going to find out next quarter, because the analyst expectation for growth next quarter is closer to 9%, 9.5%. So, I mean, that's...
Over the quarter?
Well, wow. Over the previous year.
Oh, so, okay, over the previous
but
year.
But that's still strong growth. If we get 9%, That's strong growth, regardless of how you look at it, because that's earnings to earnings, not estimates to estimates.
All right. My head just did like a, my eyeball swirled around a little bit.
Well, we'll see. And they always adjust that number. It's awfully early in the game to count on that
number.
Nine's
good, no matter what way you slice it. Right, Lisa?
Yeah.
Quarter to quarter, year over year, we'll take it.
Yeah, nine on earnings growth is solid. So a couple big companies in the news as far as earnings go on Tuesday. IBM, a very, very, very good number, announced they're going to increase their quarterly dividend by 13% and authorize a $7 billion stock buyback.
Okay, so they're buying back. They're going to give their shareholders an opportunity to get some capital gain treatment on the profits and the gains of that company's stock price.
Well, we'll see. They're going to increase the dividend. That's a done deal. But it's important to remember on these buybacks, it's nothing more than an authorization. They have up to $7 billion. Right. If the stock continues to go up, they're not going to do it. But all they're doing is saying, listen, if the stock gets to a price that we think is undervalued, we have up to $7 billion to buy it back.
Okay, so it's not their desire then to try to give their shareholders capital gain treatment instead of ordinary income through the dividends.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, not necessarily. They need to see a good price there before they're going to do anything. Also, good earnings surprises from AT&T and 3M, both Dow components. United Technologies beat on earnings but missed on revenue. Not too big a deal there. On the other side of the coin, some negative numbers and some poor guidance really from Netflix and from retailers Radio Shack and Big Lots. Whew, rough day on Tuesday for Big Lots in particular. Just got oof.
All right. So what is... Explain to our listeners, Scott, what poor guidance mean? What is the guidance you're talking about?
Guidance is when you announce earnings, you say, okay, these are the earnings that we did. These are our revenues. These are our expenses, such and such. This is what we think is going to happen in the next quarter and over the next year. And if analysts are expecting, so for example, the Apple number, the guidance number is a big number. They're expecting Apple to come out and say, well, we're expecting next quarter to do $39 billion in revenue. But if Apple comes out and says, well, we're only going to do $32 billion in revenue next quarter, that's a big problem. So okay. Guidance speaks to the company's expectation of future sales and earnings.
Okay, that's good. And you mentioned Apple again. It reminded me, there was an article or there was an announcement that Microsoft, are you going to get to this? Microsoft had some patents they had purchased from AOL.
Yeah, that they have since turned around and sold.
They bought them for $1 billion.
Yeah, they only sold some of them.
Oh, okay. So only some of those. And then they turn around, they sold them for $550 million. Who'd they sell them to?
To Facebook.
Facebook. That's who it was. Okay. All right. It wasn't Apple. Apple wasn't involved.
I do have some other Facebook stuff to talk to you about.
All right. Well,
though.
Let's take a quick break. Come back for more of this good, solid stuff.
Fascinating Facebook stuff.
Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
This it? Oh, we're back. You caught me. Uh-oh, was this mic hot? We haven't had any of that lately. Nobody's said anything really crazy lately on the microphone, not knowing that they were on.
That's a plus.
That's a wonderful thing.
Economic news. Home prices dropped in February for the sixth straight month, according to the Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Really some terrible numbers.
I thought this thing was supposed to be firming up.
It is firming up.
Are they
up.
Trying to talk it into firming up?
But remember we talked about how this recovery was going to be a really, really wide U instead
you
of
said
a
that.
Short V.
Yeah, that was your... Yeah.
And so we're continuing to see that. Home prices dropped in most major U.S. cities for the sixth straight month. S&P Case-Shiller looks at home prices in 20 cities, 16 of which fell. Year over year, prices in Atlanta down 17%.
Wow.
From last year.
If you've got cash, now's the time, right?
Well, we are also starting to see some price increases. Phoenix, San Diego, Miami. So there are some markets that are already showing some, you know, real recovery. And Phoenix was one of the worst hit.
Well, that's a lot like how the foreign stock market indices were all hammered. Now they're coming back up.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's gonna be a long process, but I'm glad we're seeing some positive news out of the housing front. Consumer confidence dipped a little bit in April to 69.2, It's still in good area there, but not good to see the consumers starting to worry a little bit. Consumers' view of the labor market was mixed. Their view of jobs are hard to get fell to 37.5% from 40%, so that's good. But the jobs plentiful index also declined to 8.4% to 9%. So basically what that means is that they went out there in the market and they said, hey, what do you guys think about jobs? And people said, well, jobs aren't hard to get, but they're not exactly plentiful either.
And maybe not the ones they want.
Yeah, and not the ones they want. And of course, on Thursday, we'll get the next number for the unemployment claims, the initial claims, and we'll see how that goes.
Any more updates on the skilled market, the skilled market labor pool? Apparently, there's a lot of employers have jobs, but they don't have the people don't have the skills.
Yeah, not in that report. That's just a consumer confidence report. Okay. But we'll start to, once we get into the ADP report and the job situation report, which will be, boy, we're not going to get those until about the 5th of May.
Was it the in the oil business or the natural gas, the fracking, that takes them like 6 months to train them to learn how to do that work?
Yeah, and it's expensive to train, as you know. So, but we'll see. Jobs market, you know, it's, you know, we had a little bit of momentum and it's starting to waver a little bit, but hopefully it'll come back. New home sales also slid 7% in March to a rate of about 328,000 a year. That's their lowest level in 4 months. So, yeah, there's some pressure on the housing market today.
It doesn't sound good, Scott. I mean, I know you're trying to make it.
Earnings are great. I'm really happy about
you're
earnings.
Happy about the earnings. You guys should see Scott. His face just lights up. When he says the word earnings, he tries not to, but the corners of his mouth just kind of flare up a little bit. So earnings are great, but the real estate does not sound good.
Well, it's.
I was more encouraged a month or two ago.
Well, but from where we were, a flattening market, which by and large, if you take the whole of the data, it's a flat market. That's okay.
Okay. So you still feel like we're going sideways?
Yeah, we got to get flat before we start going. Okay. All right, and it's a huge market. Keep that in mind. Looking ahead for the rest of the week, Federal Reserve's OMC committee, Open Market Committee, starts a 2-day meeting on Wednesday. Get the statement tomorrow. Also, tons and tons and tons of earnings, including tomorrow, Boeing, Caterpillar, Eli Lilly. Thursday, jobless claims and pending home sales. Friday, our first look at GDP from last quarter. So that'll be...
Now, is this the...
That's the first look.
That was for the GDP before I voted against the
GDP.
Yeah,
this is the first look. It really is a ridiculous process, but it's the process we have.
And what do you think it's going to be? Is this an annualized number?
2.8. Yeah. All right. 2.8. 2.8. I'm going to say 2.8.
2.8. I'm going to say less than that. You say above that? 2.8 and above, and I'll say 2.7999 and below.
Sure. All right. Okay. The over-under indicator? All right, we got it. And I have a bunch of corporate news that I want to talk to you about, including some asteroid news, some Ferrari Lamborghini news.
I love to talk about Lamborghinis
and
asteroids.
All kind of stuff.
Two of my favorite subjects. Okay, Lisa, we're going to take a quick break, and she's amazed that we're on time. So we're going to come right back. Stay tuned.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
We're back. We've got some cool stuff to talk about. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, a bunch of corporate news. Here's a story from going back to the BP, the British Petroleum leak in the Gulf with the Deepwater Horizon spill. The first wave of criminal charges on the way now.
Finally.
Yeah, but it's pretty serious stuff. Here's a guy, Kurt Mix of Katy, Texas, a former engineer with BP, is in big trouble with two counts of obstructing justice for deleting from his iPhone hundreds of text messages that he was exchanging between coworkers and contractors. And of course, they know how to find that stuff. But basically, the company was saying our flow rate out of this problem that we're having is about, I don't know, 5,000 barrels per hour or whatever it was. And he was texting people saying, I know they're saying it's 5,000, but it's really 15,000, just so you know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, and then he deleted all those messages because he was trying to cover somebody else. And so there's certainly have not heard the end of that yet. Startup company outlines asteroid mining strategy. You excited
this is,
about that?
I love this. Now you got my attention. I love this.
Yeah, this
is so fascinating.
Some story. This is, Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla Motors, Richard Branson, the Virgin Group CEO, Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon, Microsoft founder Paul Allen, movie director James Cameron, have all got together and they've put a ton of money into this
company. Couple of the Google guys, too.
Couple of the Google guys.
Larry Page, I think.
Larry Page, for sure, is in there. So these are billionaires, and they have put a lot of money into a company called Planetary Resources, mm-hmm. who is developing low-cost series of spacecraft to prospect and mine so-called near-Earth asteroids. They're going to start by mining for water, and then they're going to use that water to build the process to mine for minerals, particularly they say iron ore, but you know they're probably looking for gold and platinum and whatever else they can get their hands on.
That's so cool.
They got to get it back, though. I mean, they got to send it back.
Well, yeah, they've got to. And of course, we have this enormous gravity well that we live in called the Earth, and they've got to get it down through the atmosphere. So I don't know. Maybe they'll come up with something ingenious to do that. But yeah. I think it's fascinating. I actually have a book that when I saw this story, I've got to get it off my bookshelf. It's been sitting there for a while, and I want to read it. It's actually written by one of the guys involved talking about how you go and get these asteroids. So you said on the break, Scott, what if they find like 20 tons of gold or something?
Yeah.
What kind of impact would that have? And I was trying to do a quick search to see if I could get you the total amount of gold out there, but it's trillions of dollars. I think I saw a number. It was like 4 trillion it's a lot of, here we go. Where is it? Can't find it real quick. I'm trying to find it fast. I can't find it, but it would definitely have an impact. That would be fun. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. So we'll see. That's big news. And you know, I'm glad to see the private sector tackling space exploration since the government.
Well, I was just at NASA over the weekend and, you know, walking around and they're all sitting
fitted
there
for a spacesuit.
I would go if the kids weren't little. If the kids weren't little, I would go. But
I would go because my kids are little.
Well, I don't think I have an answer for that. But I would go. I would go, and it would be a lot of fun. And I think they're going to find some stuff, and it's going to be interesting. And NASA is over there sitting there waiting for something to do because the shuttle's done.
Yeah.
And the International Space Station is pretty set. And now they want to go to the next phase of adapting their rockets to, I watched the whole presentation, and they want to take their rockets and but they need funding.
Yeah.
And so right now they're waiting around for money. They need money to build the next evolution, which will be putting stuff into orbit. So I'd love to see this get more privatized.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, profit is a huge incentive that the government.
Well, they've had these different competitions for building the rocket to do this or do that. I think the government should let private sector do as much as possible. And I think this is a great example, but they need to oversee it because they've got to keep the safety in check.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to have much choice. Yesterday we talked about Walmart and how they're going through a bribery process in Mexico, and we said basically between us, well, really, should anybody be surprised that there are bribes taking place in Mexico? The Mexican government came out late on Monday and said, we're not really going to investigate this thing. It's kind of a municipal, low-level, local kind of thing, and they can handle it. So basically they're saying, well, the people that you bribed are responsible for investigating you, and so
we'll get right on that.
Yeah, so good luck. We're right on it. We'll let you know what the outcome of that one is. Some news on Facebook. I'm rushing because I got two more stories that I think I can squeeze
in here. Don't
rush.
It's okay. We want all the Scott Connor we can get.
Sorry, I'll get another next break. Facebook, you know, they have to announce all their numbers before they got to
show all their stuff now.
Yeah, which is not the case under the Jobs Act that we have talked about.
But they would be too big for the Jobs Act, wouldn't they?
They would, but still. They have to announce everything, and basically there is some concern now that Facebook's expenses have gone up so much.
Well, yeah, they're writing billion-dollar checks for companies like Instagram.
Yeah, and revenues have gone down so much that the company's first quarter revenue was $1.06 billion, down 6% from the previous quarter, so they're under some pressure. The analyst community didn't like it. And then finally, I want to tell you about some pressure that Maserati and Ferrari are under. Remember, we've talked about how Italy is better about collecting taxes than, say, Greece was. Well, the Italian tax police have been making a habit of going to some really fancy places, posh ski resorts and so on, and finding these vehicles, these Maseratis and Ferraris and so on, running the license plates, and you're in big trouble. It turns out of 150 vehicles they checked out, 60 owners of those vehicles had reported income of less than 40,000 euros a year. So they're in big trouble. So now all these rich people that have not been claiming any taxes are selling their Maseratis as fast as they can. Of course, nobody's buying a new Maserati. So you can get one cheap now.
You know, this is just like the IRS auditing 1 in 8 tax returns for people that have a certain amount of income, like $1 million. So, you know, that's just funny.
That's all I have.
That's a good deal. All right, Scott. Well, you know what? It's always good. We appreciate the reporting. And I know what you've got to do now. You've got to go
manage
portfolios
yeah.
and call your wife and apologize for the kid remark.
She won't hear it.
She won't hear it? Okay. She doesn't listen?
No.
Really? All right. We're going to have to work on that. Okay. I know that we have some telephone numbers and such in your personnel file. So we'll see if we can get that to happen.
All right.
You won't let her listen, huh? All right.
That is not the case. That is not the case.
All right. I've successfully made Scott Connor uncomfortable, ladies and gentlemen. But
again,
we're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back. Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
Yes, it is declassified. We're not talking about Saturn rockets or getting to an asteroid. Good stuff. Thank you, Mr. Scott Connor. All right, for our top secret segment, I've got a bunch of stuff to share with you. A lot of it about dealing with the reality. That's what we have to deal with, right? And so before I get into, I want to talk about making sure your retirement is rooted in reality so that you've got your retirement where it needs to be. I want to come back to, I had questions, some more questions about this. I talked on yesterday's show about an article by Matt Krantz from USA Today. And I had a couple people ask me about this because I only had a chance to talk about it for a minute. So I'm just going to go through it real quick again because I think you'll appreciate this. The article is written by their resident, they call them their personal financial coaches in USA Today. And so they've got a couple different people. Now, unless they're hiding something, Mr. Krantz is not a certified financial planner. I don't know if he's got any advisory experience, but I'll have to look him up on the CFP website. And I guess the first thing, the question is there a secure investment that will provide a minimum of 5% return during my retirement? If so, which one? This is a question from a alleged reader. And so the answer, he goes through this long explanation of basically saying, a lot of which I agree with, that you can't really get a 5% guarantee in terms of an investment because we're in a very low interest rate environment. And so that's true. And so the thinking is, well, then what do you do? And he puts on the table that, well, you can do a short-term bond portfolio, which I think is definitely an option. We do that at Holland Financial. That's something that we do, something that's conservative. But the reality is, and where we start to kind of, I disagree with Mr. Krantz, is that you've got risk that can be rather significant with bonds. We are at the bottom. We talked about the Earth being the gravity well to get asteroids back to the planet. Well, we are in a gravity well called low interest rate environment. And so when we try to get returns or reliable income from a portfolio of bonds, we run the risk, and depending on how long term you go, the risk can be greater, but you run the risk of interest rates going up and then you're holding that bond and you lose money. In fact, I had a great example. I just met with a gentleman who was asking us to make some recommendations for him for his retirement, and he asked me a really good question. He said, well, if treasuries are only yielding 2% or so, 10-year treasury, 10-year note from the government, you get 2%. Why is it that a lot of treasury mutual funds that invest in treasuries, why are they paying a much higher rate? Why do they have a higher payout? And the answer lies within the question. The reason these bonds that are inside these mutual funds that are treasury bonds, the reason those mutual funds have gained so much is because the bond prices were going up as the yield on these bonds were going down. What happened is everybody went looking for safety. When Europe happened, when the financial world seemed like it was going to collapse back in 2008, when all those ugly things happened over the last 3 to 4 years and these challenges both with our economy as well as overseas in Europe, then everybody looks for safety. And when people look for safety, they buy U.S. treasuries. When they buy U.S. treasuries, they bid up the price. If you're selling bananas on the street corner and 100 people walk up and all want to buy bananas, you can sell them for $5 a piece. Ordinarily, you might sell them for a quarter a piece. So it's all about demand. So these mutual funds held treasuries, had humongous gains, and now they're passing that through to their shareholders. Going forward, what's going to happen? It's going to go the other way. As interest rates go up, or as the demand for treasuries go down, the yield will go up, the price will fall. So buying a lot of treasuries or buying a lot of bonds, especially long-term bonds, is a bad idea when you expect interest rates to go up significantly. Now, That doesn't mean you can't have a bonds as part of a conservative portfolio, shorter term bonds. That's what Scott's working on right now. We have portfolios that are shorter term bonds as well as some equity exposure, meaning the security stock market part, mutual funds that invest in those. So the reality is in a low rate of return environment, low interest environment, you have to be careful taking on more risk. You can go with high yield bonds, but that's also the same as a junk bond. I was going to say a junkyard bond. A high yield bond is the same as a junk bond. They are lower in quality. They pay a higher interest rate. Why? There's more risk. So there's no free lunch when it comes to getting earnings on your money. Now, the one thing in his article that I found a bit reckless, and this tells me that he's not a financial planner, is he says, well, some investors, quote unquote, are looking to dividend paying stocks for answers. That's not a bad idea. But while some high yielding stocks are paying 5% or more, the accompanying market volatility means investors' money is far from secure. I agree with that. Here comes the zinger. Can't help himself. Others might consider annuities, but the terms vary widely and fees can be onerous. So let me out the USA Today. USA Today has huge articles, paid advertisement for Edward Jones, a stock brokerage firm. So you always, when you read articles in any paper, follow the money. So I thought his article made sense, but then I got down to the end. I'm like, well, that's kind of a drive-by shooting of an annuity. Yes, annuity terms can vary. And yes, some have fees that are onerous, but not as a whole. There's some annuities that make a lot of sense. Now, what we've got is a journalist talking about finances. That's the first problem. They shouldn't allow anybody who's not a real financial planner to write articles about finance in any magazine or newspaper, but I don't make the rules. I guess that's just the way it works. But anytime you read an article, good, bad, or indifferent, look and see who the advertisers are of that journal or that publication. USA Today, for example, half-page ads for Edward Jones here recently. Are they going to say something? Are these journalists, quote-unquote, going to write a very positive article about something that competes with Edward Jones or something negative? You have your answer. Follow the money. Almost always, it will lead you to a source of bias or somebody who is not giving you all the facts. I can tell you from doing the work I do for clients that a combination of mutual funds, I like no-load funds, ETFs, some individual stocks, some mutual funds that invest in bonds, and annuities make a lot of sense. Now, will that be the same for everybody? Absolutely not. I might meet with somebody that has a need for more income, and maybe they need a little bit more money going into an annuity. You might have somebody that does not need current income, so we might go with more longer-term investments, things that are more for growth. And somebody might have a particular plan. I had a client here recently, existing client, come to me and had received a pretty significant inheritance and said, I'm going to be buying a house. What do I do with this money, David? And I said, well, we're going to park it. We're going to invest it for you. I can put it to work for you, but we're not going to put it into an annuity or anything that's going to make a commitment. So the answer to what's appropriate is always based on the person's situation, not a drive-by shooting by somebody writing an article in a newspaper. There you have it. We will be on again tomorrow. Please join us.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.